is P.C. Fisher. His title is X-ray Astronomy Discovery Experiments, Part 3.
This talk is dedicated to a chap who passed away last year named Alan Sandage. I have to read fairly closely because the paper was written with the aid of a trial lawyer. The first paper on the subject had two purposes: to remind people of a successful discovery experiment I announced at a meeting in December 1964, and the second purpose was to help shield physicists and their families from American Institute of Physics that could be misled or deceived. Although unpublished, a copy of the handout for that talk is archived at the Center for History of Physics. The purpose of the second paper was to briefly describe the discovery I made and tabulate the behavior of some AIP members over 40 years of time. The goal of that walk was to have the AIP require members to properly credit contributions of others. That talk was published. The primary goal of the present paper is for the American Physical Society, the APS, to have Riccardo Giacconi comment on several questions of a historical nature. The delivery time of the talk is divided about equally between a brief history of the start of X-ray astronomy and the questions for Giacconi. If I fumble a little, I should say that when I gave the last talk, I didn't know what I said for the middle 10 minutes. This paper is concerned with possible unethical behavior, apparently not recognized by member societies of the AIP, and what seems to be the first unambiguous observation of X-ray emission from a black hole. The color view graph near the end of the talk is a pictorial description of the present situation. In August 1960, the Lockheed Missiles and Space Company, Lockheed, submitted an unsolicited proposal to NASA to search for X-ray emission from previously unobserved sources in the night sky. NASA replied that they could not support the proposed effort. In December 1960, Lockheed submitted a second proposal to NASA requesting permission for rocket-mounted detectors to scan along the galactic equator in the direction of the galactic center and also look at the Crab Nebula. Herb Friedman, an obvious competitor of the U.S. Naval Research Laboratory, the USNRL, and Leo Goldberg, then of the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory, were asked to recommend that Nancy Roman's Office of NASA fund the effort. My only independent proof of these review requests is a 26 November 1963 letter from Roman indirectly suggesting Friedman did act as requested. NASA divided the proposed effort into two phases: the learning exercise with spinning rockets, and a performance phase involving the requested but not yet available slowly rolling attitude controlled rockets. Funds for the first phase were awarded about a half year before Giacconi of American Science and Engineering, ASE, and associates discovered the first X-ray source, SCO-X1, in June of 1962. In May 1963, the USNRL observed SCO-X1 in the Crab Nebula. Results from Lockheed spinning rockets were published. Two spinning rockets were published, criticized by Stuart Boyer of the USNRL. This is an article in the Astrophysical Journal with an editor whose name you probably are familiar with, and withdrawn because of poor statistics of X-ray source signals, as Boyer claimed, in a non-understood but variable background whose existence had taken over a year to identify. So the Lockheed X-ray group was in disgrace. 1 month after the second Lockheed phase was funded, still having the jitters of the preceding time, in June 1964, Friedman and Associates flew another spinning rocket and discovered 8 new sources, all at low galactic latitude. In December 1964, Willard Jordan, Arthur Myerett, and I presented preliminary results of our first October 1964 attitude-controlled rocket flight. This view graph presents a galactic coordinate plot, the galactic equator being the horizontal line, for the observing program of that flight, which was established when the only sources known to exist were SCOEX-1 up here and the Crab Nebula, which is over here. View graph 2 shows the counting rate of one detector as it was scanned along the galactic equator. The observations of SCOEX-1, which are the off-scale readings, were suggested by consultants Jeff Burbage and Willie Flower on the grounds that if we made the galactic equator observations and saw something, nobody would believe us if we didn't see something somebody else had seen. The second rocket flight was, two of the counters of the three failed, so a second rocket flight was needed to get the galactic latitude information. And this next view graph shows a histogram of the latitude number of sources versus latitude of what we had found on the two rocket flights. The final results of the two rocket flights were published in individual articles in 1966. This is from an article published in 1968. The experiment presented a discovery that was concurrent with the discovery of SCOEX-1 because the experiment was started before the discovery of SCOEX-1. And the discovery is believed to outrank the discovery of SCOEX-1 in scientific importance because of the results we found and the fact that they were postulated before SCOEX-1 was discovered. The first international discussion of X-ray astronomy results occurred at the 1967 International Astronomical Union meeting, the IAU. In an invited review of surveys, Friedman gave incomplete and misleading data when he said Lockheed examined limited regions of the sky, but not say that that examination started with a scan for sources at low galactic latitudes for 180-degree range of longitudes. And Friedman further minimized Lockheed efforts by failing to mention that Lockheed had flown the first X-ray astronomy satellite experiment, which had yielded no data because of unsuccessful attempts to correct the tumbling of the vehicle and the resultant failure of the vehicle's power supply. Next, Giacconi, in an invited review on X-ray sources, was tragically misleading because he did not mention that he and his co-authors' prior republication of Lockheed's first flight results when he described the galactic equator survey performed by his group with an observing program essentially identical to that in the first Lockheed article published 1 year earlier. Giacconi did not reference that effort or provide a literature reference for Lockheed's second publication, whose position results he presented. The next view graph is a cover letter for an article presenting the final results of our 7 years of effort at performing this galactic equator survey. It was only sent to, I think that's 11 people. And you can see one of the people was the sitting president of the American Astronomical Society. The three publications just noted, plus the preprint with the cover letter, provide 4 reasons that establish that the misleading of the IAU audience was done with the full knowledge of the Lockheed effort, and so appears to have been intentional. I've tried to correct the misleading account a number of times over more than 20 years, but have not been successful. The knowledge of Lockheed's pre-COX-1 discovery proposal is not needed to question whether Giacconi's action amounted to plagiarism. Incomplete and probably misleading information about the existence and location of X-ray sources authored or co-authored by Giacconi was presented in a publication in publications of 1967, 1969, and 1985. Paper 2 of this set presented a table, as I mentioned, of actions of many people. The second subject of this paper is evidence related to the existence of a black hole. The next view graph shows position information obtained in 1964 by the US NRL and by Lockheed. The circle is the position error for the US NRL data, and the rectangle is the position error for the Lockheed data. Together, these were used to combine to secure a better source location, and then the results of the first spinning rocket flight were re-examined. And here are the data from that re-examination. The bottom set of data presents the average of data from three successive spins of a rolling rocket, and this is the proper full width at half max for a signal. The top shows a background for one spin of the rocket. The source was at a large off-axis angle and at a low altitude where the X-rays might have been observed. This appears to be the first unambiguous observation of a black hole, as Cygnus XR1 is now claimed to be. But I do not have data. I do not have the original 1962 telemetry record, so I cannot prove to you that I made no mistake in the reduction of the data. Evaluation of historical data available to me leaves numerous questions unanswered. Starting with the 1967 IAU meeting, my experience was that Staley and misleading the scientific community either were not recognized by the AAP or acceptable behavior for AAP members. Some related institutions may also have knowingly permitted stealing. In 1991, the APS adopted a code of ethics that made stealing and misleading unacceptable. In publications in 2002 and 2005, Giacconi appears to have violated the APS code of ethics. I may not have time, but there are 19 questions. Questions 15, 16, and 17 are related to that violation. Whether or not Giacconi engaged in plagiarism will still be resolved. Additional details are available. The main purpose of this talk is to have the APS provide Giacconi a forum to comment on the 19 related questions. As time is short, if I could have gone 24 months, I could have read half of them, but I still couldn't have read all of them. Confusion about the existence of the Lockheed discovery has led to a knowledgeable expert like Michael Turner publishing an accurate appraisal about significant contributions to the start of X-ray astronomy. From my comments so far and the questions for Giacconi, it sure would be clear that Turner's confusion was understandable. It is my hope that knowledge of the possibility of Giacconi's plagiarism and misrepresentation will receive limited notice outside the physics astrophysics community until he has a chance to publicly answer the questions that have been prepared. I hereby call on Giacconi to set the record straight. Since I don't have time to read the questions, I will comment that I have copies of this talk, which can't contain the 19 questions. An accurate description of the present situation is contained in this slide, in this view graph. This is a painting by Francisco Goya called The Third of May. I have one that has a title up here which is called The Price of Success. The expression of the story is that on the 2nd of May, Napoleon Bonaparte arranged a revolution in Spain. This revolution was successful. On the 3rd of May, Napoleon had all of the successful revolutionaries of the 2nd of May killed, including the leader, who was the man in the white shirt. I think I know how he felt. Any questions? For the data?
Yeah.
Astrophysical Journal, that's one paragraph I skipped over. These were talks of the proceedings of the International Astronomical Union in 1967, also in 1969. Questions listed to answer the question you just asked. It's all a matter. I haven't said anything that you can't document, or that I haven't documented. It's taken me 20 years to do this.
Any other questions?
Could you repeat, please, what you said about Willie Fowler and Jeff Burbidge? Were they?
They're consultants of mine.
Consultants of yours?
Yes.
And their response, that I couldn't hear what you said when you mentioned them.
Nothing other than that they encouraged me to go look at SCOEX 1, because if we look, I had submitted a proposal to scan along the galactic equator, and their concern was, since we had just withdrawn a paper from the Astrophysical Journal and made not only us look like a fool, but Chandra Sekhar look like a fool, their comment was, if you can't see something that somebody else has seen, nobody will believe anything else you saw.
Okay. Any other questions? Would you stand up?
You are correct, and that's why I said at the beginning this paper was written with the help of a trial lawyer. As the preceding paper was written, as I have written papers that have been rejected over the last 10 or 15 years, all with the help of a trial lawyer.
So does the society follow up on this sort of
thing? Pardon?
Does the society follow up?
Well, in one case, I wrote, the date is in here, I wrote the Council of the American Astronomical Society on a date given, wrote them several times, never got any reply. The last manuscript I wrote got turned down by some journal called Physics Today. That was in 2000. Two or four. I've sent a copy of the manuscript to the governing board of the AIP. Matters in their hands. I would have liked to have read half of the questions, because the story would have been much more straightforward to understand.
Thank you.